You did a one-man show on Broadway?
No, I did a web series called The Last Jewish Waiter about being a waiter at Katz's who wants to have a talk show, so he does a talk show while he waits tables. I can't believe you and I are so close, and you never watched it.
You told me about it. I didn't watch it. I can barely keep up with two episodes a week. I'm telling you, it's quite a commitment. I'm writing a play. I'm in the middle of a book deal. Life is happening. Three employees, two kids.
Would you say life is in session?
Yeah, it is in session. Are we recording?
We are. Here we go. You ready?
Yes.
You ready? Here, welcome back to the show, incredible painter and very good friend of mine, John Bucchetti. And before you say thank you, Dave, whatever. Say
thank you, Dave.
It's great. It's great to be here. Blah 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 blah.
It's so great to be here. Oh my God.
Oh, it's fantastic to see you in real
life. It is really good to see you, even though we talk all the time, very randomly. And if I don't pick up, you call right back too sometimes, like, and then text me a question mark.
Just to make sure.
That's how good of friends I know we are. It's like a question mark.
It's just to make sure. You know what I mean? Like, you don't answer, and then I'm like, well, maybe he really wants to talk, so I give you an extra call. And then you don't answer again. I'm like, well, I'll throw a question mark just in case you had seen the phone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like when in the first 5 years of sobriety, those like some people, like they answer the phone. They're like, hey, you good? Hey, are you good? And I'm like, yeah, I was just calling to check in with you. Like, okay, good. I just want to make sure you're good. It's like sometimes your trauma response is on in recovery, you know?
Trauma response is on. What does that mean?
Sometimes you get these feelings that like your friends aren't okay and that it's a serious call, and it's not. It's a random call. And sometimes you're spot on. You're like, oh man, I knew something was wrong. There's a little intuitive, you know, thing going on sometimes when you're calling, because sometimes we call and it's an emergency, or at least it is to our nervous system.
Explain that some more. What's an emergency to your nervous system about?
With my Al-Anon sponsor, I say, if I call two times in a row, you need to know that I'm freaking out. That was when I got divorced 4.5 years ago. I had a double ring thing. I never used it, but I needed to know that he would pick up after the second ring. So it gave me clarity, even though I never used it. I was like, if I call twice, man, you got to pick up. He goes, no, same here. You got it.
It's funny because I always call twice. I never just call
twice. Oh, that's not true. Sometimes you call twice. But sometimes you call twice just because you're a New Yorker.
Now, before we say anything else, I want to say this. John Bucchetti is a maniacal visionary, warrior, artist, poet, on a quest for two things, love and art. For John, both are interchangeable because they are two of the most important forces of human connection and expression in the universe. Heartwork, which is John's book, is the focal point of John's vision. It transforms his beliefs into visual and written poetry through the triumph of color, form, textures, and words. John Bucchetti is love and art and love are John Bucchetti. Read Heartwork. It will change the way you love and the way you art.
That's so great. That is so great, dude. Come on. That is so thoughtful and so intentional and so profound. And I'm not just saying that because it's me.
Shut
up. But it definitely helps.
What did the book lady say about it?
She loved it. She put it all right on the front. She built the deck to pitch to Simon & Schuster and all those companies. And she put it right up front. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You didn't like it at first, and
I poured my heart
into it, and you were like, this is garbage.
Oh, good God. That is the demons and goonies and gremlins in your head that talk negative. Sometimes you should not give them a microphone.
You look beautiful with the light and your painting behind
you. Thank
you. It looks very nice.
Thank you.
Now, I have a couple things I wanted to talk about. The first thing was we just did a Dopey Nation Zoom. And we had a friend of ours from New Orleans there, right?
Oh.
And he talked about the struggle in he had kicked heroin, but he still smokes weed, which is a very understandable thing for a heroin addict to do. As a heroin addict who did that, I know what that feels like. And he feels like he wants to not go to meetings because he feels like he's lying. And I know that you're a very, very good 12-stepper. How would you advise somebody in that situation?
Well, this California sober thing is real. I think I've gone back and forth on many things or many thoughts about it. And I am very accepting of somebody who needs to cope or titrate.
Titrate?
Yeah, that's a pro word. I got that from my professional friend. But like, you know, look, titrate into this thing. Easy. Easy does it. You want to smoke weed? Just be honest. I think it's fair to be honest. Be honest with your sponsor. Be honest that, hey, listen, this is all I can handle. I know who you're talking about. And I get it. Like, I
let me ask you this, though. But it's like you can't be honest public. I don't think from where I'm sitting, I don't think being honest publicly in a 12-step meeting about the fact that you're smoking weed does him any favors or anybody else.
It does possibly bring on some like controversy for some old guy in the corner that says, you know, you need to get real, buddy, which he may be right, too. But I do think that there's a certain amount of honesty. I see people on Facebook that they say, hey, celebrating 3 years, no drinking. I feel like they're being honest and saying I smoke some weed, too.
Right.
And let's celebrate that too. And this is the whole thing about 12-step is I'm a big guy of celebrating the positive. I'm not coming across here like I'm Tony Robbins, but I'm like, let's celebrate the positive. I was on a meeting yesterday and man, the newcomers were so hard on themselves and I didn't speak because I didn't get called on, but I wanted to say, guys, stop calling yourself douchebags. Stop beating yourself up and shaming the shit out of yourself. That's what got you in here.
And you would say rather than being a douchebag, to change the vernacular to say you practice some form of douchery in your life, but that doesn't make you a douchebag.
No, and actually honoring the douchery and saying, wow, great awareness. It was in the discovery of the douche that I found I don't ever want to act like that again. So I can be brave enough to say, thank you for showing up because I turned my whole life around because of that behavior. And I never want to feel like that again.
All right, just hold on for a sec. I want you to try something. I want you to hold that mic a little closer to your mouth. I want to hear what you sound like.
Is this better?
Oh, it sounds so good. Because you have a really, but then you look funny. But the sound is so deep and rich. Have you ever sang, John? And also, when last time you were on the show, we talked about food, and we called you Sugar Bear.
Yes.
You, Katie. Well, now the stupid mic is rubbing against your face, and that doesn't sound good.
Okay.
That sounds horrible. Now you look really awkward. Forget holding it. Forget it.
Hold on. I'm going to do this thing right here. I'm going to twist it so it lays up a little bit. But this is much better than the mic I was going to use.
Sounds fantastic. Now,
you
Sugar
sound
Bear,
really good. Go ahead. Well, you can call me Sugar Bear.
This is very pricey. Sugar Bear Bucati. This is very, very, very pricey.
Yes.
This is a pricey mic, and it's like I'm such a fucking scrub, okay? Or I practice such intense scrubbery that I fucking refuse to like have a mic stand. I broke it out of its housing. Its housing broke. So I hold it like a fucking idiot and I'm happy with that. But at the same time, imagine if it was like, meh. You know what I mean? I think vibes, like, would I have less potent vibes if I was, would my potency be diminished as my professionalism increased? Sugar Bear Bucati.
That's a good question. As an artist, I like to be very comfortable in my settings. Mm. And I like to be in, like when I'm painting, like all my paints are in front of me, like so that I can always stare at the painting, like a doctor who's like scalpel, gauze, all focus, hyper focus. A surgeon actually taught me that. And I also prep my whole painting palette like a chef. You know what mise en place is, right?
Well,
have everything ready, just like your Emeril. And then it's like, bam, bam, because I'm all about trying to find the flow. So anything that disrupts your flow, like that finger that you just pointed, go ahead.
What is mise en place?
I think it's a French word for everything in its place, which means everything is set out before. So if your onions are chopped, your water is measured, your ingredients is all set up at your, then before you ever cook, when you cook, you're in total flow. And that's why you watch those cooking shows and then make it so easy. They've done 2 hours of prep, you know, and then everything's so easy.
Yeah, man. I love that mise en place. I need a little mise en place. I need a little mise en place.
I could be pronouncing it wrong.
No, I think you're
I was doing a lot of Yehu when I came with a chef, because there are chefs who like the booger sugar. And I did that's when I came up with it. And it really helped my career. Well, not the booger sugar, the mise en place.
I think both were instrumental, and yes, your love of the jam band community.
I am in the jam band community.
There's a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions. Let's go.
I thought this was about you, Dave, not me.
No, I have a lot of questions. First of all, we talked about, you just mentioned booger sugar. When you were using a lot of cocaine, did you call it booger sugar?
Yes.
When's
or the devil's dandruff.
Is that, or, so you would be like,
or even I know a guy who used to call it LB. That's very rude. Do you know what that means?
LB.
Len Bias.
Oh, that's sad.
Code word.
And then anybody in the Dopey Nation doesn't know, Len Bias was a young Boston Celtic who suffered a fatal cocaine overdose on the floor of the Boston Garden, I believe.
I don't know about that, but I know he celebrated his big contract, and they were putting it in his, they were putting it in their, it's cool, like Kool-Aid, and drinking it, partying with it.
You told me a story, I think, off the show about being a drug courier. You want to tell that story?
Oh, Jesus. This was all a setup. This is a shakedown. Are you talking about Van Halen?
Yeah, the Van Halen story. It just popped into my head. It just popped into my head.
Come on.
It just popped in. It's not in my notes.
It was in your notes.
It's not in my mise en place. Here, look. My notes are very, very sparse.
Oh, okay. I will tell this very quickly, but when I, it's a very, so I don't want this to get out. This is a private story. No, I'm just kidding. But honestly, I didn't do any, if I did anything, I would get some weed and give it to other people. And then I got a free quarter bag. That was it. I didn't deal. One time, right when I got sober, I think I was still smoking weed. I was on the marijuana maintenance for 11 months before I found the meetings. And I went, my buddy's like, hey, I need you to do me a favor. Take this backpack to the hotel. I knew the guy. He worked on the road with the band. I had known him from a previous band, and he was very cool.
So he was a roadie for Van Halen?
He was a roadie for Van Halen. And he goes, you know him, just drop it off at the hotel. So I'm like, okay, no problem. This guy did a lot of favors for me and helped me out. So I'm like walking into the hotel with this big ass backpack full. This is back in the day when you just could not get weed. So I'm sitting in a hotel lobby. I smell like horrendous back then.
The dank. You smell like the dank.
Dank, and it was so good. And I was like, oh my God, I can smell. And I'm in this hotel. I've got this backpack, and I get to the room, and I'm like, I'm going to lose everything based on doing a favor for a guy. I didn't even get paid for this. And I'm like, I'm going to get arrested getting, you know, weed for David Lee Roth. And
Diamond Dave.
All I got out of all, they were so grateful, these roadies. They're like, we've been out of it for like a week. They're like, we are so grateful. I remember this is back in the like You know, this is back when Bush and the four horsemen of the apocalypse are running the country, and we were a subculture. Like, nobody was smoking weed. I got kicked out of a house in Kansas City for smoking it on the back patio. They were like, leave. Like, you, now all those people are eating gummy bears when they go skiing in Steamboat. And they're like, you want a gummy? I'm like, no, I don't. But anyway, back to the hotel. I am like thinking I'm going to lose it all. And that was kind of part of my bottom too. It's like, why am I still messing around? I got arrested for weed in Denver, Colorado for a little bit of shake because it was still illegal back then. This is before everything flipped on its head and Obama got elected. Anyway, I got a guitar pick that said, like, what's Eddie Van Halen's son's name?
Wolfgang.
Yeah, I basically got Wolfgang's guitar pick for the lanyap of the whole thing. That was my payout. And I didn't get probably to went you, to jail for years because of that.
But
you didn't. I wouldn't rat anybody out. I wouldn't.
But you didn't. And you didn't get to meet Eddie Van or David Lee Roth or Michael Anthony or Alex.
No.
But you were a courier and a stoner, which is very important information for our show, I think.
That's fine. I'm a mule.
You're a mule. Hung like a mule.
One day.
Right. Any thoughts on the Diddy story while
we're here?
I don't
know enough about it, but I really don't want to talk about something I don't even know. I asked my assistants, like, what's going on? And nobody really told me what's going on. Do you want to talk about it?
Nah, I'm just playing. We just did our dopey Patreon Wednesday morning Zoom, which you've been a part of a few times. It's always better when you're there.
I love that. Thank you.
And there's a lady there who is a horrible stoner, and she just stopped smoking weed, and she's really struggling sleeping. And I wanted to hear John Bucati on early off of bud sleep issues.
Right now, early, or my first year of sobriety?
No, like in the beginning. Like, how did you how do you deal with sleep in general, and how did you deal with it when you first got sober?
It's funny. When I first got sober, I went to bed, or I'm sorry, before I got sober, I went to bed every night at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., even if I didn't party. Because even if I didn't party, I started going down the law. My roommate had a great TV with every station. I went, I would just check out that way. Wake up about 2 p.m, take a bong hit, clean the house, maybe. And then all of a sudden I was off to the races, back again at night, painting live at this jam band venue with 900 people. And it was like a whole thing. It was a whole tribe of people, a little bit of Wookiees, a little bit of energy healers, hippies, and it was this whole subculture. And they had three bars. It was very...
Hold up.
I'm going into sleep. I'm coming back.
No. What's the difference between a Wookiee and a hippie?
I would say a hippie is somebody who is very organic in nature, very simplified, very into the earth, very beautiful, very aware, somebody who recycles, somebody who cooks and pays attention to the simple things, civil rights, all those things. And then I would say a Wookiee is somebody who's extremely into, I would say that this is me judging, but most of the Wookiees I know are very into everything, farmies, drugs, kind of that on steroids, so to speak. And if it's gone into the extreme, and there's not a lot of balance, and they
are. It's interesting, though, because the term Wookiee comes, of course, from Chewbacca, the Wookiee,
sure,
who's a large sort of simian-like creature who was probably very much in touch with nature. So isn't it interesting that the Wook definition is more drug-centric and the hippie is somehow more of the naturalist, when the Wookiee in reality was a creature in the trees?
Well, yeah. Well, so are St. Bernards and Labradoodles. But listen,
back to the story.
I have nothing against Wookiees. But at one time at a string cheese show, we helped put on this great festival, Wakarusa. And at like 5 a.m, I went out to Shakedown. And I was so happy because we fought so hard for Shakedown. I go down Shakedown and Wookiees are running wild, you know, hundreds of them, broken, you know, glass everywhere, fighting, arguing. And like, I was like, oh my God, this is, we've created mayhem. This is not Woodstock. I thought all this was peace and love, and it's not. It's people like, you got any farmies? And I'm like, oh my God, what have we created? Anyway, back to the sleep. When I first got sober, I had to reverse the whole thing. I took my shades off the wall. I went from waking up at 2 in the afternoon and going, you know, going to bed at 5 a.m., waking up at 2 in the afternoon. I moved to the mountains. I went to bed at a normal time. I was taking all sorts of naturopathic stuff, sleeping tea. I had a naturopathic hippie doctor from New Mexico. She wasn't a doctor by any means, but she was kind of a psychic and gave me all sorts of stuff to titrate. There's that word again. Titrate.
Were you having sex with this? Were you having sex with this doctor? Just out of curiosity.
No. And to this day, I have never met her. It was always a phone thing. And we never had face-to-face like we have right now. I see you.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes. Dave. Yes.
So, yeah, I still struggle with sleep now. I was on medication, Wellbutrin and something else, like a couple years ago after the divorce for about 6 months. And I fell asleep really good. And then I wanted to get off of them, you know. So anytime I've ever been on medication in my sobriety, I wanted it to be temporary. I was always taught.
Wait, hold up. Wellbutrin always made me very edgy.
I did during the day, but then this doctor, I can't remember what goes with it that goes well with it.
And when I got prescribed Wellbutrin, he was like, I think you should take a benzo. And I was like, I think you're right. He's like, what kind of benzo do you want? And I was like, I like Xanax 2 milligram bars. And he goes, well, then you should have them. And he prescribed me those. But I wasn't sober then. So do you take any kind of sleep aid now?
Nothing now. I'm down to like I don't do Diet Coke anymore. I do drink coffee. I make it half calf because I want 3 glasses of it. I love this, like this spiritual. I know you're going to make fun of me. I love the sacred ritual of coffee in the morning. And I go back to my studio and I paint for, you know, like an hour and do these writing things. It's kind of what the book that I'm doing is. It's like these kind of like things. I don't do no soda, obviously. I don't eat any bread hardly at all.
All right, stop. Don't stop bragging.
I'm just telling
you. Just give me a break.
I'm telling you where I get my energy.
Hold up. When did you stop drinking Diet Coke?
I don't know. 4 years ago.
Okay. Now, no melatonin, no Benadryl.
No melatonin, no Benadryl. I do take, magnesium. You know what that is?
Do I put it in water? Can I tell you a fucked up story really quickly?
Yes.
Okay. And okay. So I'm at the meeting, like my 12-step meeting that I go to, you know, often during the week. And I'm at the meeting and we're reading, you know, the Living Sober book.
Yes.
So we're reading the Living Sober book, like the chapter about sleeping. The importance of sleep, right?
Okay.
So after we read the chapter, we kind of, everyone's sharing about it, whatever. And a bunch of people shared how they didn't like the way melatonin makes them feel, whatever. And I share that I still often take melatonin or Benadryl. Are you listening to me? Fucking breath work? What are you breathing loudly?
I'm just taking a deep breath.
What's wrong
God's
with
sakes.
You? I'm fucking telling you something. You can't. If 1 second you're not talking, you can't just listen to me.
I was becoming a better listener by taking a deep breath.
No.
For God's sake.
You're distracting me.
Let's
Jesus.
Talk here on our nervous system. So everything can be dramatic, Dave.
Will you just fucking listen to me for I don't feel cared for here, John. I don't feel listened to. Just listen to me. Okay? So I share, you know, and I don't want to share in the 12-step meeting that I take melatonin and Benadryl because that doesn't sound very sober. Wouldn't you judge somebody in a meeting if they said they were taking melatonin and Benadryl?
No, those would be on the other side of the line I have that I made up myself.
Do you judge me for taking such things?
No, I'd tell you.
Anyway, after the meeting, there's a woman at the meeting and there's a guy at the meeting. And I love both of them. The guy, he's kind of a little like girl crazy in a way. You know what I mean? Like he's just got divorced and he's like very involved with the women. He reminds me of like Richard Dawson on The Family Feud, that he needs to like kiss every contestant.
That's so creepy. And what your younger viewers would say is cringy.
Oh yeah, man. Anyway, but I love this guy and I love the lady. And the lady comes up and she says, oh, she's David. She goes, I found this thing and it really helps me. And I'm standing with the guy and I said, okay, well, what's the thing? And she says, oh, I drink cum every night. And the guy went, what? The guy went,
is this
what?
True?
She said, I drink cum every night. And the guy went, what? And I said, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, really? And she goes, yeah, it's this amazing product. It's called cum. It's just magnesium. You put it in water. And I said, what's it called? And she said, cum. And I said, are you saying cum? And she said,
oh my
yes,
God,
it's called cum.
I know what cum.
She says, I drink cum every night. I drink cum every night to sleep. And my friend's eyes pop out of his head. Like, yeah. But he's too much of, and it's a moment, right? That all I want to say is, are you saying you drink cum to go to sleep? It's all I want to say, but I refuse to say it. Because I don't know this woman that well, and I don't want to disrespect her at the meeting. But she said, the next day,
calm.
I go to the meeting, and I get out of my car, and she comes up to me, and she gives me a white bag of powder.
Yes.
She goes, it's cum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like cock.
Yeah.
You know what cock is in the East Coast?
When you cock
the bathroom and then they talk about cock.
Yeah, you're cocking everything after a little while.
Cock.
So she gave me a dried bag of cum, which she pronounced cum, which I couldn't get enough of. I couldn't get enough of this dried bag of cum, which is just magnesium, you know?
Yeah, it works. It relaxes the body.
Are you disgusted by this story? I thought you'd get a laugh out of this thing.
I laughed, and then I laughed like 3 or 4 times.
Please. You're fucking drawing, doing breath work over there.
I'm taking notes.
You are the worst. You're the worst guest.
You are
the worst guest in the history of this show. I don't even know how you live with yourself.
Don't you shame me.
Have you ever drank cum before you went to bed at night? Is that ever a thing?
I have drank.
Sugar Bear?
I used to eat tons of sugar to fall asleep, which I actually like. It's just not very good for the kidneys, but like it worked, man. I would be so exhausted. This doctor told me, you're so exhausted, you're eating sugar. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. And she's like, you're doing it to calm down. And I go, well, I get fired up. She goes, you do get fired up for about a half hour. Then it induces a crash, a heavy crash. So that's why I was doing it. I'd have like 3 bowls of cereal at like 9:30 at night to calm down. Cause I was literally hacking my own nervous system because I would be so wired if I didn't eat it. And I would be, I would stay wired and watch TV and get more fired up. So the crash was initiated by the rush of the sugar. Does that make sense?
Are you telling me you drink cum to go to sleep? I'm lost.
We're done with this joke. This joke has been played.
It's calm. Calm down. No, I still eat cereal at night
It's just sugar.
I'm trying. So, do you know what a pocky is?
Yes.
Do you know what is your definition of a pocky?
A tiny pretzel breadstick dipped in chocolate. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. So we gave our daughters, and I should say Linda, made Easter baskets for our daughters, and she put pockies in each of the thing. And I love pockies. They're just tremendously delicious. And last night I'm watching the Knicks Heat game, right? And I'm like, I bought myself a bar of 80%. See, I'm lying. 70%. dark chocolate. I wanted to get the 80%, but I wanted that 70%. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because
that 70% is sweeter, but the 80% is closer to what I'm trying to do. Anyway, I get the 70%. I take a bite. I'm like, I'm going to eat that fucking Pocky. Fuck this shit. So then I go into the Pocky and I start pulling the Pockies out. But something went wrong with the box of Pockies, and all of the Pockies have melted together in one giant corn dog Pocky.
And sounds like, great.
It was incredible. I take that. I take a jar of peanut butter. I'm dipping. I ate the whole fucking thing.
Great. Did you get what you were looking for?
No, I felt like I could really go for some cum to calm me down after that.
Yeah, it's still working. Sometimes it's like that rake joke with the Simpsons, you know, and Groundskeeper Willie steps on the rake episode, and then it doesn't become funny. But then at the end of the episode, it becomes funny again. So you keep trying, and maybe it'll become funny again. Let me ask you a question. My OA sponsor would say, what's underneath it?
Oh, it's like I'm telling you.
What's underneath the emotion?
I'm looking for cheap endorphins.
What's going on?
I'm bored. I'm overwhelmed. I just have a lot of things. Not enough. I need more. Yeah. More. But I've been trying. As you know, we talk fairly regularly. I've been trying to stack positive endorphins. Mm-hmm. This morning, I did. Yesterday, I started my running practice again. And
how's
I did
it going?
I did a day. Good. I'm back on the right foot. This morning I meditated. I fucking did breath work. I did exercise. Yeah. Box breathing. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you. And you know why I'm doing this, right?
For your 50th birthday.
No, I'm stacking positive endorphins, but I'm also training for the Rich Roll show.
Oh, yes. Big, huge step for you.
And this is an announcement. And I just want to be 100%.
This isn't an announcement.
This is an announcement.
Wonderful.
The announcement is I bullied Rich Roll into inviting me onto his show. And I knew Sugar Bear Bukati was a big Rich Roll fan. So I was excited to tell him because everybody else I told, they're like, who's that? Who's that? But I know Sugar Bear Bukati loves Rich Roll. So John said to me, Sugar Bear John said to me, you need to get prepared. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, this is very important. And so I was like, John, maybe you can help me train for the Rich Roll show. First of all, weren't you excited and shocked that he's going to have me on his stupid show?
I'm not shocked. I'm excited. I'm happy for you. You work so hard to be yourself, to put yourself out there. You have your own following. That's so impressive that, you know, I'm excited for you to be able to share that with him. He's very good at what he does. So it should be an exciting thing for you to do.
I'm so excited. And when I say stupid show, I just mean I'm scared to go on it. And my show is
You should say that.
Right. So how are we going to prepare? How are you, Sugar Bear, Coach Bukati, going to prepare me to do a good job on the Rich Roll program?
Well, so there's two things.
Yes.
You are loved by this nation or your following.
Hold up. Should I tell him the drinking cum story or no?
So I don't know how this show happened. We're 10 minutes, 20 minutes in, but you just took me on a ride with all this intuitive, improvisational jazz talk or whatever. And I never knew what we were going to say the whole time till we got to now. Cause I know you were saying, hey, let's get on and talk about Rich Roll. So till now. So whatever you did then to be authentic, it sounds like all he does is have a conversation. So my suggestion to you is, how can you be your authentic self? How are you authentic? You're the best. You're authentic in everything you do because you have 10,000 hours times two doing this show over and over and over again. And that's you're like the Beatles. You played so much that you can just be on at any time. So however you want to go into yourself is I highly suggest it. It talks about He just talks in conversation. So I have a conversation with him and take it wherever he goes and whatever, wherever you go, you're good at that. So that's just like playing pickup ball on, you know, you just do it. The second thing I was going to say though, I think most of these people that come on podcasts, talk about their podcasts, you kind of want to, I would say you would like want to scrape off the like cream of the crop and like taking all your episodes and saying, you know, what is the best of the best of the best? Is it like you have these characters like Fentanyl J, you know, that is still out there? You have taken something that people are too serious about, right? It's like just recovery so serious. But if you listen to Dopey, you're giving people a relief to laugh. And how important is that, right? As Jerry Garcia said, like for the most part, when he was talking about life, for the most part, it's supposed to be fun, right? And like he was like, we take, you know, wear life like a loose garment, right? And you guys are the epitome of that. The other thing I was going to say is, you know, if you were to look back in hindsight in the rearview mirror of this show, what is like the top three things that really surface to you as riveting moments? I know you have alchemy, you know, you've hit alchemy, you've changed, you've transformed, you're not the same person. You know that like Toodles is your thing, Chris is your thing, you're following. What are the things that surface to the top? Because you do have to say your best of before you go down a wormhole and just talk about, you know, how, you know, the stupid little stuff that you talk about is everything to you guys, but all, or us.
What do you mean whatever. You guys?
I have my Dopey socks on. I wear them. I'm not wearing them now, but I wear them. I am in this tribe. I feel very good about that. Sometimes I talk separate, but that's my ego.
Is alchemized a word?
I don't know, but alchemy is. So.
Yeah, but alchemized, that's a good word. I like it.
It is now, motherfucker. That's right. It is now.
There's something that can be done with that word. Like, it's alchemized. Like it's like next level. Like that could be like some kind of really big.
Have you read the book?
The Alchemist, of course.
Yeah, it's great, right?
You know, this is something that I think we should talk about. But okay. First, I want to say this. That Jerry Garcia quote, right?
Did like I that, misquote it?
No. I think it's really interesting. It's like the story was they all go, they're tripping. It's like 1967 or 68 or something. And Owsley has them move to Los Angeles, okay? And he has them only eating red meat. He has, like, freezers full of red meat, and that's all they're eating. Like, they're not allowed to eat vegetables or granola or anything. All they're allowed to eat is red meat. And he takes them to the Watts, you know, that structure in Watts.
Yeah, I love that structure. The Watts Tower.
Watts Tower. And they're tripping, you know what I mean? Because Owsley, he would feed them red meat and acid. So they're at the Watts Tower, and Jerry is tripping, and he's talking to the band or whatever, and he looks at the Watts Tower, and he goes, you know, that's not really where it's at, man. And they're like, what do you mean, Jerry? And he goes, well, I could sit here and make something that's going to stand, because the Watts guy wanted to make something that would stand there forever and never be gone. And he's like, well, I can make something that's going to stand there forever, but that's not really the thing, man. He goes, the thing is to have fun, man. And I just want to have fun, right? And that was Jerry's thing. But then the irony was that the Grateful Dead is the Watts Tower, and it can never be taken away. It will stand the test of time. And I wonder if he knew that when he said that.
Well, that just starts a 20-minute conversation about why he left and when he left. It wasn't fun anymore. Remember that they were breaking down the fences in, where you call it, in Indiana or whatever, right? And then they wrote that letter to their fans. And that was apparently when the end, with the beginning of the end, and it wasn't the same anymore. Just like all movements, they're over at some point. So there's a lot of people that say it was over when Jerry died. I don't like that because I don't believe that totally, because I believe you can reinvent yourself. But there's a lot of truth to that. Like, art movements are art movements when they're done, because you can see them in the past come. You can see the beginning, middle, and end. I just said come. And
I know. Did you say you can see it? You can see Jerry come?
I mean, this is perfect, though. This is what you need to do, is you need to be like Stern in a sense, or a good comedian, and like take the small thing and roll with it with Rich Roll, and then stay with the big stuff that's riveting and help this whole community, because there are people in your community that could not get sober with the 12 steps, but they were able to relate to you and your humanness. Humanness, is that a word?
I think so.
Anyway, and they could relate to that because your humility, or your you know, you're just human. There's your There's so many guys with 17 years that are like, if you just work the steps and you get a sponsor, I haven't had a day that I haven't been happy in my life for 17 fucking years. But you got to work the steps and go to a meeting every day. It's like, that dude doesn't sound happy. Mm. I don't want what that guy has.
Right.
You know, I want somebody who tells me, you know, this is my new thing in the last 5 years. Life can be hard. Emotions are real. Shit sandwiches happen, you know?
Wait, hold up. Would you say you want some cum drinking, cookie eating guy that loves fun and cum?
No.
Would you say that?
Don't
John?
Take this onto the Rich Roll show. This is a great, great prototype. A great rough draft
of what not to do.
No, now we have known what has come to the surface and not to use on that show. But you are truly over the top with your language, and that's why people like meetings, is because they hear fucking shocking shit. And you know, I really love men's meetings now for whatever reason. I don't know.
Is it the cum that makes you love the men's meeting so much? I have two questions.
Do you think anybody's laughing at this joke? Is it going to get funnier as we wrap it up?
No, it's going to get less funny. But I've got two more questions before we go. First of all, does cum help you go to sleep at night?
Magnesium does.
Why do you keep doing that?
I keep getting notifications on my phone because
disturb.
I will do it right now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Now, let me ask you one more question. You mentioned to me recently about stoicism.
Yes.
Can you tell us about stoicism?
Okay. So I've read about the pleasure trap. I've read a lot of books about addiction. I've read about all these things. And for me, as an American in the Midwest, watching MTV, drooling over Bubblicious commercials and trying to get the most out of every moment through other things, i.e. sugar, cocaine, sex, or whatever, I wanted the instant gratification. And chasing that pleasure for me was trying to be the Michael Jordan of that. I thought there was something. When one of my bottoms, or in the chapter of my bottom, I had Kind Bud, cocaine, Absolute Vodka, sitting on a marble table with like this cool pipe. I had all the sexy stuff that I wanted, and I was incredibly lonely. I was paranoid. I was unhappy. And the gig was up. It was the end of the line. I was like, this is it, man. I've been wanting this for years, to try to have the best Kind Bud, the best cocaine, the best this, the best ladies, the best lifestyle. And now I'm totally empty inside. I was like, fuck. And I was like, I can't have kids. I can't have a love life. It's 4 a.m. and I've surrounded myself with this shit that's killing me. And I'm going to die. And that was the beginning of what I slow burn, you know, walking, exercising, doing the things that hurt or make you uncomfortable or what make you happy. Stoicism is about doing things that are healthy, and then you have a happier life. When I serve 8 hours for somebody else, donating my time or doing a retreat or something, it's sometimes it's not great. And sometimes I don't want to do it, but then the benefits seem to be quietly better than the dopamine rush that I got from, you know, fucking sugar daddies or fucking, you know, eating 20.
Did you say fucking sugar daddies?
I don't know. What are those things? Sugar babies?
Oh, you're talking about those? eating candy called
whatever,
sugar daddies.
Whatever was a fucking dopamine rush, right. Whether it be porn or, you know, chugging a soda or two Red Bulls when you're sober, whatever it is like finding that rush or that like that instant gratification has not worked for me.
How comfortable has stoicism been, and how deep down the rabbit hole of stoicism are you?
I just did breath work for 25 minutes this morning. For 5 minutes, I absolutely did not want to do it. There's a resistance there that was real, and I overcame it. I did it with a friend, and that helped. I did not want to get out of bed and take a 5-mile walk this morning at 6 a.m. The minute I woke up, I said, I'm going to sleep in. And my friend was on the way to the park. I went with him. We walked the park for 5 miles. Those are the things I'm talking about. Yesterday, I got in a cold plunge twice, sat in a sauna for 20 minutes. I feel like the benefits of those are going to have years of happiness in my life and balance.
I cold plunge. Have you ever read this book? It's called Zen and the Art of Drinking Cum. No, I didn't know you cold plunge.
You got it. There it is. You nailed it. I thought you totally got me, fucking ass.
I didn't know you.
I'm buying the book already. I'm on Amazon. And you're like, you got me.
But I didn't know you cold plunged.
I do.
Why?
Oh, I've heard it's good for your heart. And my sponsor died about a year ago, and he was incredibly healthy. He meditated. He worked the steps. He went to a meeting every single day, and he died of a heart attack at 54 years old. I don't want to die of a heart attack. I want to be there for my kids, and I want to do things. And I read, you know, listen to podcasts about how the heat and cold are good for your heart, and being uncomfortable for 20 or 40 minutes in each can have lasting benefits. 95% of the people in America, this, I don't have any stats to back this up. I heard it on a podcast. But 95% of Americans spend less than 8 minutes outside every day.
I'm scared to cold plunge. Scares me.
It's all about breath. Next time you come to New Orleans, we'll do it and you'll love it. I was in there for 3 minutes. The first minute, it's all about relaxing into it. I know that sounds terribly.
You naked?
No, I just wear a swimsuit. It's at my health club.
And they have what is it? It's like a little basin?
No, it's like a giant bathtub. This one is.
And you plunge your whole body, your head too?
I worked with, see this Protect Your Peace guy, Dan DeLuise. I follow him and I'm a friend of him.
Here we go.
He taught me how to breathe in cold water, and it changed everything because I've been plunging for 5 years and I'm always uncomfortable. But he taught me how to like take these deep breaths while I'm in the cold plunge. And then like 2 minutes into it, I'm totally relaxed. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Do you want to plug Tommy Rosen before we're done too?
I love Tommy Rosen. You know why? Because he talks about the elements of recovery need to be more than just
don't drink
your head.
And don't use.
Right. Yeah, you have to talk about. Yeah, if you're 350 pounds and you're overeating and you're not addressing that in your recovery, that's probably something you should address within the same realm of your recovery, right? Like you should be 12-stepping that shit. If you're fucking anything where you're acting out, you should use the 12 steps. I don't care what it is. Like, and if that isn't working, go to a therapist. Like if you're verbally abusing your husband or your wife, then you should address that's under the same thing. If you're fucking taking 12 pokies and dipping them in peanut butter every night.
One giant pokey.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's,
my God.
Yeah, that's right.
I think they should make that as a product. It's incredible. an incredible thing. And I was like, I shouldn't do this, but I have to. And afterwards, I didn't feel bad. I felt pretty good about it, to be honest. I felt pretty good. I really enjoyed it.
Back to the cold plunge. All this goes back to the nervous system, in my opinion, right? Like, we re-traumatize, or we get our hackles up, or whatever they call that. Is that what a dog has when his hackles come up, something like that?
Sure.
You know, we get nervous, and we cope with it through either like freaking out, or like calming down, or checking out. And when we learn to, like, you know, cope with our nervous system, then we are doing this thing in recovery. And self-regulation is what we're talking about. And when I proactively do cold plunges, I don't really flip out. When I proactively go to meetings, it's like I'm exercising my nervous system that I'm safe for this hour.
You think putting yourselves in an uncomfortable position prevents feeling really uncomfortable later on?
Yes. If you meditate for 20 minutes and you go through the uncomfortability, is that a word? It is now. Of like listening to your head say, get up. I can't do this. I need a cup of coffee. I need to go to the bathroom. And you literally train yourself that like I'm zen. I'm okay. I can handle these. This is impulse control practice, right? By practicing healthy, you know, things. Then when you go to say, hey, you want a joint? You don't go, oh, fuck yeah, I'm fucking dying for a joint right now.
Right.
Fuck.
Right. It's training. I've been holding this shit in.
My fucking wife is driving me crazy. Give me a fucking hit. You want a Red Bull? Even though you don't need one, you say yes to it because I was so impulsive, dude. I mean, I can't tell you. I if somebody handed me a shot, I did it. And I'd, you know, like I used to get like this buddy of mine would say, here, he'd go like this. And I'd open my mouth and do a hit of acid. Bro.
Yeah.
I had no thought like, hey, what am I doing tomorrow? Or what do I have on the agenda? And one time I did a hit of acid at Cervantes. I didn't even take the plastic off of the canvas yet. I was getting ready to paint some band. It was sold out. Everybody was there. I literally, a half hour later, I'm like, I guess I'm going to go to paint. I went to paint. I couldn't even get the saran wrap plastic thing, you know, the shrink wrap plastic off the canvas. I had giant fettuccine noodles for fingers, and they were just, I couldn't get the plastic off, so I didn't paint. So everybody walked by me, and there was just a blank canvas for 2 hours during the show. And I'm like, I'm sitting there like, I don't know what to tell you. Everything's melting.
I would imagine you painting the plastic. But Sugar Bear Bucati, thank you for coming through. Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a great time.
Thank you, John. Stay strong, Dopey Nation, and fucking toodles for Chris.
Toodles. Bye-bye. I want to be good so bad. I want to be good so bad. I want to be good so bad, so bad. But bad desire's all I ever had. I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder if it'll do me any good. Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I want to
Thank you.